This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
your award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, in the car. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ plus community, just like you? So you may not be aware, but times are really tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. So tell your siblings, your workmates, heck, even wind down your window and tell someone else stuck in the traffic to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture. Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12 on Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9 with myself, Tass, and of course, Macca.
Thank you, Tass. And it is 26 years, 362 days since Joy's first.
And you
ever.
Call me punctilious. In fact, the way in which you said it almost sounded derogatory, Macca.
Now, Ben, who's our Twitter person today, he says he's on Twitter now that you finished your rant, Macca. There we go. So, it's my great pleasure to introduce Steve Demopoulos. Steve is the member for Oakley, Parliamentary Secretary to the Premier.
Yasu, Macca.
Yasu.
Good morning. How are you, Steve?
How's your yar?
Very good.
How's your yar?
So yar is dead, unfortunately.
Dead your yar.
Yeah. But she was. They were both beautiful. Absolutely gorgeous. I lost the last one about 4 or 5 years ago. So.
Oh, sorry to hear that. That's very sad.
She had a good evening. 99.
Oh God, 99.
Oh, fantastic.
God, imagine if I lived to 99.
I don't think you will. No. I don't think you will, Macca. Not as a smoker, you won't.
No. And Dimmo, Thursday, I had 4 posts put in my top jaw. You know, to get teeth.
He's had his skull. He's had his skull drilled in.
Yeah. So I actually looked a bit like Judi Dench yesterday. Anyway, let's get down to it.
Steve, we want to talk about
the warm introduction.
Yes,
we want to talk about the state budget. We're really keen to just get some of your reflections on it, and I think we've already advised you that we're also going to get a reflection from the social services sector, but also the business sector.
And Paul,
Yeah, so we've got them on straight after yourself. But before we actually launch into that, we have hit day 29 of being, you know, virtually COVID free in Victoria. So we can actually now call ourselves COVID free. But how has the business sector in your electorate been coping? What's been their response and their reaction?
It's interesting. They were in many respects at some of the depths of despair during the worst part of the sort of July and August. And because I think you know this, but I had a business in Oakley myself years ago, and I've still got contacts from that period, let alone the period of being on the council and now being in this job. So direct contact, text messages, phone calls from them, emails. So they did it really tough, and not just hospitality, you know, other businesses, like, you know, you have landscape gardeners or photographers, that kind of thing, and they were really doing tough. But, you know, there's a sense of optimism amongst many of them, not all, but amongst many of them there's a real sense of optimism. And it was interesting, the most recent Westpac, 2 weeks ago, Westpac released its Consumer Confidence Index and showed that there was a significant boost. I think we were at increase of 5.5% off memory since the last month in terms of consumer confidence, and that was before the Victorian state budget. So I think they did really tough, as you would imagine, despite all the assistance Commonwealth government and the state government provided. There's no checkbook big enough to cover the losses of business businesses in this pandemic globally. You know, we had the really good things like no evictions, commercial tenancy arrangements where the landlord was incentivized through land tax relief to provide rent relief and then deferrals as well. But now, I tell you, I see a lot of optimism. And I've been around the last 2 weeks, safely. So thank you for that message, Macro, at the beginning. I was listening in before I came on. You're spot on. We've worked so hard for this, so yeah. Let's just keep doing the right thing. But, yeah, so I see a lot of optimism test I want to... I think we should all get there and support businesses as best we can.
I think that's a great message.
And I think it needs to be... you know, local. You know, there's a lot of restaurants in your electorate, and there, you know, whole areas that, you know, are definitely focused on different cuisines, and it's really important. You know, we've been existing on takeaway and stuff, but we're now able to go to those restaurants. Sure, there might be a time frame that you're given, but go and support them, because if you want them to be there for the future, you need to do that. But also the shops and services, right? You need to support them, because if you want them there for the future, you've got to support them now. That's really, 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 really
absolutely
important.
And they're a sense of our identity too. They're like our strip shopping centres, our civic spaces, inherently commercial spaces too. So they take on a sense of we understand them as our place where we're anchored, where we live. And so people get really attached, and so we should. So 100%, local is so vital, because you know we don't want to travel too far at the moment anyway. Really, we don't want to be
not at all
unnecessarily causing risk. But you know, this is a good. So you asked a question. I was going to say this is a good segue to the budget, mind you, because I feel in many respects, as Tim Pallas and Dan Andrews have said, we have to use the power of the Treasury benches and the power of the public purse to help underwrite the balance sheets of businesses and families or individuals. You know, my partner always has a go at me about, you always talk about families. Whereas, often as gay men and women, yes, we identify with a broader family, but it's about supporting families, individuals and businesses, because this is the time to actually invest. It's not the time to retreat from public spending. It's the time to actually double down. I think that's what we've done in the budget.
Now, you've got a big fan, Steve.
You've got many big fans, actually, Steve.
Like, they're messaging in.
Like there's no tomorrow.
And we're not going to... Yeah, and... but one of the comments is, you know, love particularly so much of the support for the arts, particularly the new modern NGV Museum. And... you know, also says, Steve's social media is always informative and positive.
No, my favourite is this one, Macca. Macca, this is a question. This is a statement to Macca from one of our listeners, the gorgeous 317. Macca, it says, Steve's Greek heritage gives him immense wisdom.
So what's your what's your excuse, Taz?
I'm just punctilious, Macca.
Punctilious.
And of course, I've got a message here from my my very good friend Loz. Who actually happens to be visiting a bakery in your electorate called Maison Arnaud, and claims that it's the best bakery in the whole of Melbourne. So good on you, Loz. Enjoy that.
Oh, fantastic.
Now, Steve, we're very keen to hear from you what you think are the top two or three hallmark or defining moments in this budget. What are those two or three things that you think you are most proud of and you believe will define this period in history?
Wow. Okay, well, that's a really... I love that question, Tess. And I reckon... Can I just take you on a little bit of a journey, just a minute? We started this year with bushfires, and they are so far in our... sort of recessed in our memories now, but started with bushfires across Victoria. Many, many people were devastated by them in regional Victoria. We came straight into the pandemic after that. We have not had a normal year by any stretch of the imagination, not just with COVID, just and before COVID. Clearly, COVID was the biggest disruptor. So we were already in a space where any fiscal parameters, any social license we had previously had to be rewritten. And we had to effectively form a new social contract with the community and say, well, this is unprecedented. What is it that we need to do? And that was the guiding sort of influence where we thought, well, this is no time, as I said, to retreat from public spending. We have to actually go in strongly and support not just those people and families and businesses who did it tough, but the economy generally through stimulus. So that's one part of the equation. The second part is, when you do redraw the sort of social contract with the community, you can do pretty bold and innovative things. You know, you can do things that were previously not really considered to be a priority or acceptable enough. You know, those kind of intractable problems that we, when we're at the pub or a restaurant or someone's home, go, why doesn't the government fix X? Why doesn't any government do Y? So for me, Tass, it's got to be stuff like the public housing, building in excess of 12,000 units over the next 4 years and starting literally in the next few months. Why should we put up with homelessness? We just shouldn't. We just shouldn't put up with homelessness or rough sleeping. That, for me, is a huge, huge deal. $800 million investment in a... that was over $5 billion, the public housing, over the next 4 years. But the other one is, that for me, mental health, a down payment into the interim report of the Royal Commission. Every one of us has been impacted through someone we love and mental health, and the powerlessness you feel.
Yes.
I've had a family member for years, and you just feel completely powerless to do anything. We've put in this budget an investment of $800 million just for the interim, to start with the interim recommendations. The final report comes in the first couple of months of next year. There'll be further investments. Stuff like that for me are profound, and I don't think we would have had, while the Mental Health Royal Commission started earlier than the pandemic, I think the pandemic reminds us that no one can be left behind because we're all interconnected, whether it be insecure work, rough sleepers. We're all interconnected, and this virus showed how interconnected we are. From one transmission to 10,000 is a very, very short period of way, like a few weeks of exponential growth. Those things for me...
Do you have a third one? You've talked about public housing and mental health investments. Is there a third one?
There's a whole bunch of little third ones that make a big difference in people's lives. I'll just give you one of those for me. And this was something that Tim Pallas and obviously the Premier pushed, as did Jenny McArthur previously in her previous role before health. You know, in the state of Victoria, when you have, and I'm not going to use the right terminology, Luke Dunellen will do a better job than me on this, but you have kids who can't be at home because of a whole range of reasons at home. So they are in foster care or in some kind of arrangement, either institutional, but better in a family setting in foster care. That all the support the state would provide, we as taxpayers would provide, would cease at the age of 18. It doesn't matter what complications and what challenges that child had, the minute they turned 18, that tap got cut off. The foster care support got cut off, all the other support they would get to try and keep them on, either in training or education. We extended that to the age of 21. So kids who are now don't have to have this immediate stop at 18, they transition through right to 21 because the complications they have and the challenges they face don't get solved overnight. So I'm really proud of that.
Hear, hear. That's a really important initiative, I agree.
There's a lot of those little ones.
Yeah, I agree. Speaking of other little ones, before we take a quick break, LGBTI community, what's in it for our community?
Yeah, what do we get?
Well, we get an economy that's going to be injected with a big stimulus and a whole bunch of other stuff we care about. We care about homelessness just as much as anybody, don't we? We care about all those things, but specifically, though... on top of all the other commitments that...
Now, Steve, you're sounding a little bit like our federal colleagues, our federal politicians, who argued that women drive on roads and take trains as well when they were asked about the women's budget.
We all like to inject a bit of stimulus, but, you know...
Come on, Steve.
No, my point...
I think you can do better than that.
My point is that... I'm never into this kind of identity, but we care about the same thing.
Of course
and
we do.
Additional ones, right? So, and additional ones. So, in terms of the commitments we've made over the last few years, the price and all, you know all that, but The only additional ones in this budget that are specific are the community grants program, the LGBTI community grants program, and that's $1 million in funding for this budget, and also the there's a something we call the sector economic recovery grants, which is a $2 million, and some further assistance for psychological and mental health support for the LGBTI community, because isolation, this entire year has been so difficult. And while a lot of us are celebrating, I mean, I'm very joyful on this call because I love the fact that I was out last night with my partner and some friends at a local watering hole, the Wines on Post, it's called in Hughesdale, and there's a lot of joy around. But we've got to remember that this is also a really awkward time of year for many people, because heading into Christmas, it's been it's almost like the pandemic's been a bit of a hangover, and people are still doing it tough, and people in our community too, many isolated people living by themselves. So we've put some more money into the I haven't got the exact data on me. Sorry, Tess, but into further support for
That's
the...
not very punctilious.
Well, you're not in Treasury anymore. You're in the Premier's office now, so we expect you to think differently.
That's right.
That's okay.
I've also had a few drinks last night. Dan gave me the authority to get on the beers.
To get on the beers.
Now, we are going to take a short break, Steve, but I'm going to pose this question to you. It's a question from one of our listeners. Can you please recommend the best Greek food restaurant in your electorate? So think about that.
Think about that.
And let us know straight after the quick break.
What's your view? Let us know by sending us a text 0427-JOY949 or on Twitter at SatMagJOY949.
You are on Saturday Magazine, JOY94.9, 21 degrees, Tass.
Hot and humid in here, Macca.
Oh, it is. Hot now, and humid and sticky. We need to inject some stimulus.
Speaking of which, I think saunas have opened, haven't they? Is that right?
I believe so.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Never been my thing, really. Now, Steve, Steve, your answer to the question about where to get the best Greek food in your electorate.
My mum's house.
I knew. Okay, give us the address.
Yeah, I knew he'd say that.
Mrs. Demopoulos, we're coming.
I drew inspiration from Macca's first question about money. Yeah, look, there are so many places, and I would draw five. I chose one. It is the eating capital, one of the eating capitals, in my view, of Melbourne. So come down to Oakley anytime. Carnegie is also extraordinary in a different way. I've got Carnegie in my patch as well. It's Korean. There's Italian. There's French. A whole range of stuff. Like Huntingdale, huge places. But there's many good places. There's even listen how the progressed the hospitality cuisine in Oakley specifically has become. You think Greek food is all meat? They literally have a vegan souvlaki.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I'm sorry. I mean, I'm very happy to eat vegan food, but there's no point in trying to create something that's sort of like meat, really.
Oh, God, they're going to be out the front with pitchforks for you, Tess.
But, you know, it's like we went to a Christmas lunch one year and a woman turned up with a vegan turkey.
Oh, yeah.
Which I thought was weird. It was like, it was shaped like a turkey and it had herbs on the outside.
Was it wearing sandals?
And I don't know what it was. I tasted it just to be sort of, you know, inclusive, but it was dreadful. Anyway, we need to go. Next question I wanted to ask you is debt. So clearly, Tim Pallas is racking up quite a debt as part of this budget. What will this mean for future generations?
So, you know, people's children and grandchildren.
Yeah, what does it mean for our children, our grandchildren? Yeah. And what's in it for them?
Okay. Two things. It's a really good question, but two things. Some of this stuff, I think we take for granted the kind of quantum leap in investment that we're making. Like, we're talking about the suburban rail loop. We're talking about doubling the size of the city loop. Last time it was touched was 40 years ago. Airport rail, public housing. These are assets. This is not extraordinary debt to pay salaries of people from one year to the next. This is creating an entire state of assets for future generations. So I've just named four there. That's number one. You can't look at one side of the balance sheet and not the other. So we're creating a whole bunch of assets for this taxpayer spend. In terms of the actual debt, yes, look, it's the highest debt we've had, but it is the most unprecedented year. So if this is not the year to actually create that, use the power of your good management of the economy over several years to then be able to spend. The best way to pay off debt and to get rid of budget deficits is by having a thriving economy. A thriving economy throws off cash in terms of revenue to governments, both federal and state. For us, it's a hugely property-related income flow and the Victorian government revenues, also GST. Both those things, property taxes and GST revenue, are absolutely fueled by a thriving economy. So if we were to do anything but do what we did on Tuesday, that would not be the case for the next couple of years. We would not have an economy that is thriving, and I think we will because of this. So the capacity to pay it off is much better because we're pump priming the economy effectively, but we're also creating some, I don't see what Paul says when he comes on, but hopefully creating some business confidence for them to invest as well. There's one other little one I was just going to say. We set up a fund, Breakthrough Victoria Fund. That's a $200 million annual investment. And you may have seen Dan on, he was at the Walter and Eliza Hall Institute a couple of days ago announcing this. It's basically grabbing some of the best ideas, embryonic ideas of research labs from, you know, small entrepreneurs and keeping them here rather than creating future industries and wealth in Victoria and Australia rather than them going to San Francisco or Singapore because that's where the biggest capital is and that's where they get the biggest offer. So we're trying to create some future wealth in new industries. We're also trying to fuel embryonic industries like climate, the clean energy industry. But the only way to actually pay off debt is to actually create economic wealth. Mm. That's what we're trying to do.
I wanted to segue to a slightly different matter, Steve. And look, I agree.
But before you do that, Macca, can we just, because we're going to ask our next listeners this, is our next guest this as well, what's your score? What's your score out of 10 for the Victorian State Government budget? We think we know your answer, but
my answer, and I exceeded my expectations. I've got to say it's actually above 10 tests. It matches the sacrifice made by the Victorian community. And I think that's the best way to measure it. The Victorian community sacrificed a lot this year. This budget, I think, does that sacrifice some measure of justice.
Okay, 10 plus.
10 Make plus.
10 plus.
Now, this is a bit of a technical question, Steve, and we're going to ask the same of Paul from the Victorian Chamber of Commerce and Industry. I support the government's statement and intent with regards to insecure work and sick leave. But my question is, the government wants to initiate a pilot program to provide up to 5 days leave for casual workers. Now, as you know, in the building industry and in the community sector, there are infrastructure set up where people are credited with an amount to cover their long service leave because their jobs, they're often perhaps not less secure in a lot of ways, but they're transient. They're working from one place to another. My question is, if someone is paid the award rate, and this doesn't always happen, I accept that, but if they're paid the award rate and a component of that for casual work is sick leave, has the government considered, or perhaps will you consider, that component, let's say for the sake of discussion it was $1 an hour, okay, in that casual rate, going to a fund to provide for sick leave for those people who are casual workers rather than it necessarily just being funded
on top of,
because you know people that rely, you know, so often on our social welfare system, it doesn't. You know, people will say, "Look, there's a, you know, there's this, you know, a sickness benefit." Well, yeah, try and get it. Yeah. But have you actually considered that? Because it, you know, it does exist in other industries around long service leave. Was it something that was considered?
It's a good question, Macca. I don't know, to be honest with you, the answer. But what I do know is that in the next 2 year pilot's going to go for 2 years. That they're exactly some of the issues that we're going to cover off, because you're saying that the casual rate is meant to account for those kind of provisions.
Yeah? Well, theoretically, yes.
Yeah, and would we then use the difference between the casual rate, the slightly higher rate, whether it's a dollar or whatever it is, compared to the base rate, take that off, put into a fund. Yeah, and I'm not sure, but I'll...
A little bit like the portable super leave scheme that's been set up by government for community workers.
Can I say, guys, that's right, spot on, long service leave portability for cleaners and security guards. But can I say, my view, it's interesting, because if you work back from the goal we're trying to achieve here, the actual outcome we're trying to achieve is not having disincentive for people who are often the poorest paid. Even if they're legally paid, they're often the lowest income earners, not having a disincentive for them to stay at home when they're sick.
Yeah.
Now, if that is achieved by what you're proposing, that's fine. If it's not, though, and sometimes the problem is that because they're already low-paid workers, even the casual rate is not...
I understand that. It's the concept that, you know, businesses already come out and said, we'll ask Paul about this and said, hang on, we're already paying this. Sure, for the first couple of years, the government's going to do it. Then they're saying, well, potentially, you know, businesses will pay. So, yeah, perhaps, you know, we'll have you back on again in, you know, a month or so. Get back to us on that. Ask Tim.
Yeah, we'll.
Ask Tim as he thought about this.
Or shoot us a text or something.
He'd love to come on. He's going to kill me today.
We'll ask him.
Last time I saw Tim, he said that. So remind him. He's got a promise he hasn't committed to.
We'll just ask him. Steve, I've got a couple of questions from some of our listeners here. One wants to know, how do you keep fit after eating all that food? Now, this is Melina from Melina Smith.
Who
I love Melina.
Do you actually know Melina?
Melina and I occasionally correspond on email,
I see. Well, so do we, actually. We've never met Melina.
Let me correct this. First time we corresponded was the day after, or a couple of days after, I came on Joy for the first time.
I see.
It was because of Joy that I met Melina, not the other way around.
Well, Melina's been advocating that we get you back on, you know, virtually every time she communicates with us. So what's the answer to the question about keeping fit with all that food?
Can I tell you that it's except for a weekend, I skip brekkie, and so you have this kind of intermittent fasting, I try and do a bit of light exercise. That's about it. There's not much more. But my partner also reminds me. He pats my belly occasionally when it's when it's protruding, and that's just a sign of love, but also a sign of a warning.
It's like a bit too much information, I think, Steve.
Now there was one other which we're nearly finished. But how did you comprehend all the criticism of Dan being called a dictator, and particularly, and I'm going to call it out, calls herself a journalist, Rachel Baxendale. No, you're not Rachel. You're a scribbler. Just a scribbler. You're a rat bag.
Matthew, I'll comment on the first point. It's really hard because I copped a fair bit. And you know what? You're in this job, and that's part of it. But with SkyRail and with taxi reform, Uber, and all those big pieces of work in the last parliament, I copped a lot of that. And you know, a very good friend of mine who has been in politics for a long time, and I won't say her name, but she said to me, you cannot possibly be taking personally those comments on social media. And I said, why? And she said, because they don't know you.
Yeah.
And therefore, it can't be. And when I made that association, it took me a while. I thought, that makes a lot of sense. When you're criticised by someone you love or who loves you, a family member, a friend, then it's meaningful, isn't it?
Because it is.
What I take from that social media commentary is absolutely a policy touchstone. People have a different view. I take that. I don't take their personal stuff. It's still a constant battle. I'm not saying I'm... And with Dan as well, as a friend, someone I consider a friend, I find it hard on his behalf, but I think he is so disciplined. Can I tell you, this man is remarkable. Disciplined, committed and determined, and imaginative and creative as well in terms of what he put together with the budget with Tim. But that's not a factor in his daily work.
Steve, I find it extraordinary how you can continue to operate. I happened to be on your Facebook page recently looking at your post to do with conversion therapy, a bill that's just been tabled in Parliament. And the commentary in that post was actually abusive and aggressive. It was horrible. I couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you have no control over that, and I didn't see you participating in that, but people were going at each other in such a horrible way. Steve, we're out of time, unfortunately.
Do they write for News Corp too?
Who knows, Macca, who knows? But we are out of time. Delightful to speak with you this morning. Thank you for your time. Thank you for getting out of bed with your...
tummy.
I was going to say your woolly head, given that you've been out partying last night.
Being on your show. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, great.
I can't get enough. Thank you.
Yeah, good on you.
Cheers.
Okay, enjoy the rest of your day.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.